Hello there, ladies, gentlemen, and people who identify as other things, and welcome to Keyframe on the Geek Show Podcast Network. We're here to talk about animation, anime cartoons, puppetry, Play-Doh, anything. If it's animated, we talk about it. There's only two of us today. I'm joined by Rob.
Hello.
So yeah, it's just the two of us.
I'd say we're a skeleton crew, but neither of us are anywhere near being skeletons.
I was going to make a Winter Olympics reference, but it's too sunny for the Winter Olympics.
No, we could do with some winter right now.
Don't wish it away. The sun goes and then it's darkness and it's bitter and it's cold and then we all like, oh no. Yeah. And that's the thing, in Britain, you walk outside on a sunny day, if you haven't heard somebody reference the weather within 10 minutes, you're not in Britain.
Anyway. We've got news. The trailer for something heinous and dastardly has come out. Yes, the trailer for the Teen Titans Go movie.
Teen Titans Go 2, the movies.
Yeah, and you and I have very different opinions on this.
Well, you see, I was once like you. The thing is, like, when it starts, Teen Titans Go is an abomination to what Teen Titans originally was. I mean, we were there at the beginning when it had plot, when it had, like, you know, somewhat decent animation before they went with this whole, like, the kind of chibi, but they're not chibi, and the more comedy rather than serious. I mean, there was comedy in Teen Titans. That's not...
Thing is, it had its dramatic moments to balance the comedy, and it wasn't like that puffy AmiYumi show that where they were just going around the world doing weird stuff, and it wasn't like, you know, all the other shows that were on at the same time as Teen Titans. But Teen Titans Go is just joke after joke after joke.
Yeah, I mean, it's got some catchy tunes. There was one where, I mean, they're using memes now.
Yeah.
And that one where Robin tries to race Kid Flash and he's got that Sour Grape song that gets stuck in your head.
I mean, the thing that annoys me about the trailer is that it's so puerile, and I use that word correctly for those people who think I didn't. It's so puerile because the whole point of the story is that Robin isn't viewed as a hero because he's too young.
Yeah, he's because he's like Batman's ward, not like adopted son. He's the ward of Batman, you know.
Yeah. So that then leads me to ask one simple question: why? Why do we movie about this?
Well, see, that's the thing. For watching Teen Titans Go a lot on Cartoon Network, I mean, have you been watching the series as it is at the moment?
No.
Oh well, you've got Raven being Lady Legasus and Lady Legasus, because they do this show where it's all about the arms and the biceps, and they all get ripped, and she's like, no, it's about the legs, and then her alter ego hero Lady Legasus.
Yeah, I figured it had something to do with legs, the way you said it. That's what I mean about the juvenile humour. I'm sorry, but that humour for me is on the same level as, you know, why did the little brick cry? Because its dad was up the wall and its mum was round the bend.
Sorry. I know you're making a serious point, but that was funny to me. Which probably explains why this trailer actually appealed to us.
Exactly. And there is the difference between me and Tucky.
Well, no, see, this is the thing, right? I had really low expectations when I heard they were doing a Teen Titans Go movie. Like I say, I am not the biggest fan of it, but this trailer was so self-aware. And it's just one of the things, you know how the Deadpool movie was so successful?
Yeah.
Because, like, there was a lot of fourth wall breaking and there was a lot of, like, little references here and there. And that's what I think. I don't know if there's such a thing as a movie goer who just goes for like the crossover references and the like little tidbits here and there.
They are, and they're becoming more and more common, which basically is a detriment to movies.
And
if you're taking your girlfriend or your boyfriend or whichever friend it is, okay, whatever gender friend they are, if you're taking them to see a romantic comedy, the last thing that you want is a romantic comedy that's heavily filled with memes.
Well, you never know. That might be a thing.
Really?
It might be society might be heading towards now. So memes win elections these days.
Memes might win elections. So are we then going to see porn movies filled with memes? Because porn movies basically are already memes.
Yes. I'm not talking fake taxi kind of ones, but yeah, I think Brazzers were the first ones to like meme it up. Then you got the Bob's Burgers parodies and Triple X Avengers. And the
thing is, it's going to go back in on itself. It's going to create this kind of Ouroboros thing, the snake eating its own tail, which, ironically enough, is actually a very good reference when you're talking about porn. I didn't mean to do that.
But that's a thing. I mean, the Teen Titans Go, yes, it's memes. Yes, it's self-aware. But it's just daft fun. It is juvenile fun.
This from the man who couldn't stand Pop Team Epic for exactly the same reasons.
I know, I'm conflicted. the thing with Pop Team Epic, though, right, it was too memey.
Is there a line in the sand for you? This is my line in the sand. You'd like Captain Picard. This far, no further.
I might read up to him wearing a dressing gown blowing a flute, but that's about it for Sir Patrick Stewart for me. But it's one of those things, the Teen Titan Go movie, when they turn around in Deathstroke, and they reference that, well, are you Deadpool? And one, it's hearing Deadpool referenced in a DC thing. They're basically taking Deadpool's shtick and using it, like, to beat him with.
Well, they're not really beating him with it. I mean, they're basically calling Slade Deadpool, which, in the trailer, Slade does have a valid point. He had the one-eyed mask first. In fact, he had that look before Deadpool did, which is fine. But Spider-Man had the look before Slade did.
Yeah, it's that thing where they're like, you Deadpool. No, I'm not Deadpool. Why does everybody say I'm Deadpool? And that's a thing fans do say that Deathstroke is Deadpool.
Yeah.
And vice versa. And the other reference there was, it's like, oh, we've got a movie. Was there ever a Green Lantern movie? And he's like, yeah, but we don't talk about that.
Yeah.
it's like, that was also like another... far off Deadpool thing, because Ryan Reynolds, I like the Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern movie. I also like the Deadpool movie, but it's the whole, I don't know, it's like when superhero movies, the thing is with Deadpool, like I say, a lot of fourth wall breaking. And I think they've gone for in Teen Titans Go, because hell would they do in the live action movies?
Well, I wouldn't say that. See, I think Deadpool has changed a lot of things with regards to movies. We just haven't seen the trickle down yet. Deadpool 2 will be the telling blow. In fact, it'll be the killing blow. Deadpool 2 will do really well, and more movies that break the fourth wall will come out. That's pretty much a guarantee.
Right? Oh, yeah. We're definitely down the superhero one, because they're trying to find a way to reinvigorate that whole comic book movie genre, because, I mean, DC gets battered quite a lot.
Well, this is the thing. DC... basically went about it the wrong way around, and this is something that we've talked about on 4Panel before, right? DC, what they did was try to cram 10 years of development that Marvel had done into just a couple of years. Well, at that point, it wasn't 10 years, it was like 5-6 years, right? But Marvel had already laid the groundwork, laid the foundations. DC were coming into the party late.
Definitely, it was like they did Iron Man, they had like 3 Iron Mans before they did something that was like considered... like big and blockbuster. I mean, the thing was, the Iron Man movies were fantastic.
Well, no, because they did 2 Iron Man movies, and then they did Avengers after the second Iron Man movie. Because that
third one was after, wasn't it?
Yeah, because Iron Man 3 was the one that dealt with the trauma of Avengers.
Yeah, but it's one of them things. I mean, they already laid out the stall that there's Iron Man. I mean, even at the end of The Incredible Hulk, where Tony Stark makes the end of credits appearance with General Ross, and it's like, I can sort your Hulk problem.
Yeah,
I mean, it went nowhere, but, you know, it all linked in.
Yeah, eventually it all looped in together. And this is the thing, DC never had anything like that. Teen Titans Go, I don't think... because the other thing about DC as well is they've always kept the animated universe away from the other universe. And Teen Titans Go is in its own special little universe where all the snowflakes are. On that note, shall we move on?
Yes.
right, okay, so... the Association of Japanese Animations have published an English language summary of its anime industry report from 2017. We mentioned this before.
We referenced it a few, about half a year ago now, because it was end of 2015, 2016's.
Yeah. It's interesting to see that the English version of the report has actually come out now. And one of the things that I found really interesting about it was looking at the graphs, the steady increase of the value of the anime industry.
Well, that's quite a jump.
I say steady increase. It is quite a jump year on year. At the end of 2016, it was valued at around $17.5 billion. And at the end of 2017, I don't know, but it'll be more than that.
If the graph follows this, then they're looking at about 19 to 20 billion easy.
Yeah. The other thing that I found interesting, though, was, and again, we mentioned this before, was just how far down the list the UK is when it comes to the actual number of contracts that we have with the anime industry over in Japan. There is a third part to this that I did want to touch on, which has to deal with money. But China is the biggest consumer of anime.
No surprise.
And then Korea, which those two countries I would expect. Then Taiwan, then the US, and then Australia, and then Canada.
Yeah.
Now, Canada, close to
France, though. Canada as well.
Well, France and Canada are pretty much the same, yeah. But the thing is, France, I expect, Canada was a bit of a surprise, but then again, you know, France and Canada do have a close relationship. Australia, I know they love anime anyway. There's not much to do in the outback. New Zealand, again, same as Australia. And then the UK. What surprised me was that Hong Kong was much further down the list than I thought they'd be.
Well, isn't Hong Kong like China connected?
Hong Kong and China are basically connected, yeah. But Hong Kong is a lot further down the list than I thought. The other thing that surprised me was right at the bottom of the list was Luxembourg. I'm thinking, Luxembourg? When? How? Why? What? What? Luxembourg likes anime?
Well, you go off from that. Look, Malta's there. I know Malta's got its own comic convention because an anime convention, I should say, because there's quite a few of the artists who actually travel over to Malta for it.
Yeah,
I've heard good things.
Yeah.
Up from that, Cambodia.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, wow.
I remember Cambodia. It's like Pol Pot and all that. And
right in the middle of the list, though, Andorra.
Next to Switzerland and the Philippines. Vietnam's in there.
Germany's down the list, yeah. Countries like Vietnam and Singapore and Malaysia and Macau and, you know, Thailand, I expect them to be on the list. Indonesia, I expect to be on the list. India, I expect to be on the list. But countries like Andorra are not your normal first choices here, are they?
No, it's like when Eurovision opened up to the rest of, like, Europe.
Yeah.
And you saw these little states that used to be part of Russia. Like, oh. And so that exists.
The thing is, when you look at this, where's Greece? They have a pretty big consumption for anime. I know that they do because they have several fan conventions in Greece that are pretty popular. Sweden consumes a fair amount of anime. Norway does.
As you say here, I'm looking at the thing. It's the number of contracts on a country-by-country basis based on the anime industry survey questionnaire.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what this anime industry survey questionnaire is or what questions were actually on the questionnaire.
I think the anime industry survey questionnaire was probably done by companies rather than individuals. It's, 19 companies did the survey. So those companies probably don't have dealings with Greece or Sweden or Norway or countries like that. But
So it doesn't mean like they're out of the picture completely. This is just what they can collect. There's obviously data there that they obviously can't collect and can't measure.
Yeah.
So there's got to be like a few extra countries in there probably with much bigger contracts as well.
Well, there's no guarantee. See, one of the things is the US companies, for example, well, US company, I should say, because really Funimation is the only game in town there at the moment. Or rather, they were, weren't they? They're not anymore, they are they?
No, they've got a Crunchyroll and Netflix. Everyone wants a piece of that pie.
No, I mean on the DVD distribution.
Oh, DVD distribution. Well, Sony and that's picked up, so.
Well, Sony's bought Funimation, so.
Well, everybody's battling because, like we say, it's a huge billion-dollar industry. And, I mean, Brazil's missing off this list. I know Brazil has a huge anime
yeah. But the thing is, Brazil's anime following is for specific titles.
Well, it's still a following.
It's still a following, yeah. And that doesn't mean to say that they don't follow other shows or that they don't use services like Crunchyroll. The thing that I found interesting about this, though, about this entire report, was that even though there has been something ridiculous, like a 12% increase from 2014 to 2016, it's a massive increase in the actual value of the anime industry and in the growth in the spread of the anime industry. But even though that's the case, the actual industry over in Japan hasn't felt that much benefit from the growth, because most of the growth has happened in overseas markets. And even though the Japanese industry does feel some benefits from the overseas market growth, it's not direct.
It's definitely not. And it's an interesting thing, like their domestic market versus their overseas. Obviously, they're going to see more in overseas sales because now everybody has an easier access to anime or anime products, whether it be through different merch companies that start up, different events that start up. And we also have the one thing, the streaming sites like Crunchyroll, like Funimation, Netflix putting stuff out there. I know a lot of the other streaming companies in America, like Hulu and Amazon Strike and all that, they're getting in on the act, and that's just, it's generating more interest. You've also got to look at things like celebrity interest as well.
Yeah. More celebrities. More celebrities.
Michael B. Jordan from the Black Panther movie, he came out as an anime fan, and then a few other of Hollywood celebrities have came out as anime fans, and generated what celebs like. It's like the old days when kings and queens used to like something, then the whole country had to like it, or the whole country just joined in because the kings and queens were like trendsetters, and now Hollywood celebrities are seen as that.
They weren't the first ones to the party, though. They're just the most recent celebrities. The thing is, if you look at, going back to wrestling, for example, Sasha Banks is pretty much a terminal Sailor Moon fan.
Huge.
Yeah. Massive Sailor Moon fan.
It's not just like the New Day when they come out of WrestleMania dressed in CN armor.
Yeah. And Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania wearing the Over 9000 Vegeta t-shirt.
Yeah. And the fact she's actually part of the wrestling
former UFC world champion wearing a Dragon Ball t-shirt. So
that brings all the genres together.
The thing that this kind of highlights is, see, anime fans like to believe that anime is just their little niche and that's it. But what they have to wake up and quickly realize is that that's no longer the case. The rest of the world has woken up to just how much anime there is and just how popular it is. And they're basically diving straight in, feet first. They're not going through the usual. I know plenty of people who basically this year, just in the space of this last few months, have basically said, oh, I watched this show. They'll literally phone me up and say, I watched this show. It was quite interesting. I didn't think anime was like that. I'm like, when did you start watching anime? I'm like, oh, I just thought I'd give it a try since you've been watching it for years and you're always talking about it.
Yeah. Welcome to the club. Obviously, there's that thing where, like you say, people have seen it as a niche. And it's always been like, oh, it used to be a dark secret. I used to watch it at a VHS in the basement, doing my own fan dubs. But in this day and age, it's no longer that. You don't need to do that. The companies and the producers do that all for us.
See, this is where we come to the problem with the fans, and this is one of the downsides to the current boom. Those of us who grew up with the VHS tapes, what's happening with the anime industry now is what we always dreamed of. It's what we always wanted with anime. We wanted it to be accepted in the same way that normal television, that video games are now accepted, because everybody plays video games now. Nobody, if you walked up to somebody and said, yeah, I play video games, no one's going to bat an eyelid these days, are they?
Nah.
Whereas one time, you might get beaten up in school for saying you play video games. But now, everybody plays video games.
No, that's the thing. I mean, I was just saying the other day on my Facebook wall, I saw Dele Alli, Tottenham and England footballer, Dele Alli, is doing game streaming now.
Yeah.
He's sitting there playing Fortnite, and I'm thinking, all these people who have had dreams and aspirations of being like a YouTuber or somebody who plays the games professionally, which used to be like an ordinary person goal, celebrities are getting in on it. Jason Mewes, he does streaming. He was streaming Call of Duty.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that these celebrities are now, they're going to like eat up any revenue that's available. Because like I say, people go and celebrities are the big influencers. If they're big, if they're in movies, people will follow them Dele and they will watch whatever they're doing.
Yeah, the thing is, Dele Alli, I'd say, is a much bigger draw than Jason Mewes because, I'll be honest.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll be honest, who the hell remembers who the hell Jason Mewes is?
Anybody who's seen Zack and Miri make a porno.
That's it. That's it. And how many people?
James Tyler Bob fans as well.
Yeah, but they'll look at that and they'll go, oh, isn't he that fella from that movie one time?
Yeah, Dutch Rudder guy.
Yeah, that's him. You know, and they'll say, that's it. That's how they'll know him. And they'll be, oh, right, he's doing video game streaming. Oh, his career's fallen, hasn't it? I can envision it now because my first reaction when you told me Jason Mewes was doing video game streaming was like, can he not get any acting jobs?
Well, that's a tough industry out there. But the thing is, gaming and streaming has that kind of like the big draw to it now. And people with live streaming now, the whole industry's changed, and it won't be long before we actually see like live streaming anime, where we're watching people watching anime and reacting, and people will I think Crunchyroll's actually starting to do it.
No, that already exists on YouTube. They're called reaction videos.
So they just sit and watch an anime episode. Nobody else gets to see what's going on, but they get to see some guy react. It's Gogglebox. It's people watching people watching people.
Yeah, because we live in a voyeuristic culture. We get some kind of deranged pleasure from watching other people enjoy themselves, and I don't know why.
Mr. Rogers had it right all the way back in them times.
Yes, hello, he did. Neighbor. Yes, he did. Hello, neighbor.
He's just like watching people.
Will you
he's getting wholesome.
Won't you,
as well.
Won't you be my neighbor? Anyway, let's move on. We've got other things to talk about. I believe you've got something, or do you want me to go first, Tucky?
I don't know. Have you seen what I've seen?
I haven't seen what you've seen, but I am familiar with it.
Okay, finish with me, and you just go ahead and get yours out of the way.
Okay, well, I've been watching Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex, the Blu-ray version, which I'll do the second gig next week. I prefer to call these now, after much deliberation, I prefer to call it Gitzak, or Sack of Gits.
Gitzak.
Gitzak, yep. And Gitzak Second Giggity. So, anyway, Gitzak is basically a continuation of Gits, or Ghost in the Shell. I'm going to keep calling it Gits because I'm having one of those days.
Oh, by all means, go ahead, get yourself out.
Get it out of my system. So, anyway, Ghost in the Shell, Standalone Complex, it's a continuation of the original movie. And the thing that I found very interesting about the Standalone Complex was that it's a lot more detailed because it is a TV series. It's a lot more nuanced than the movie was, again, because it's a TV series. Now, there's a reason why it's called Standalone Complex. There are two sections to this. The first section is basically standalone. Now, scattered throughout the series, there are individual episodes that they seem like filler episodes, but those are just the standalone episodes. The complex episodes in this are dealing with the now famous or infamous Laughing Man. That's the whole purpose of the complex episodes in Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex. And the two of them, the standalone episodes and the complex episodes, kind of interweave with each other over the course of the series. And what that creates is this interesting idea that it's not so much focused on just the Laughing Man case, but that the world is still moving, even though they're investigating the Laughing Man case. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that it's this weird dichotomy that seems to work for some reason. And I think the reason why it works is because of the complexity of the storyline and the complexity of the characters as well. I'll tell you something, with the live-action movie, if they'd basically based the character of Makoto on the standalone complex version and not on the movie version, I would have been immensely happy.
Because you're saying the standalone complex,
yes,
Makoto Kusanagi would be much better than the movie one. I'm just thinking if Scarlett Johansson would have actually researched that part as well as the movie part. Well, for a character.
The reason why I say that that she would be better is because the Japanese dub, right? In the Japanese dub, Makoto Kusanagi is played by Atsuko Tanaka.
Mm-hmm.
And in the English version, You've got Mimi Woods and Mary Elizabeth McGlynn playing the role of Makoto Kusanagi in Standalone Complex and Second Gig. Now, what they've done with the dub, they've basically done the intuitive dialogue, the intuitive script, which actually works so much better because they're basically, rather than sticking solidly to the translation they've gone for, this has the same effect as the words that are in the Japanese dub. This is what we would say if it was in English. And they've tried to match it to the mouth movement, stuff like that. So they've done a really good job with the dub, right?
Right.
The acting is brilliant throughout. But the thing that got me with this is that with Standalone Complex, there is an element of humor underlying things because of characters like Bato. Bato likes to tease the Major. He likes to wind her up. He likes to push his luck because that's his character. But Bato in the live action movie,
he's all serious.
Yeah, and that didn't work for me because Bato is kind of Makoto's emotional support. And so he plays the fool every now and then to try and bring balance to things because she has difficulty doing that.
Yeah, it's like comic relief to stop her from actually just breaking and killing everything.
Yeah, basically. And so that was an element, that was part of their relationship that was missing in the movie, and I didn't like that. The fact that it was trying to be too serious and didn't actually focus on any of the humor. And there's some great humor in this. It's some very black humor as well, but there's some great humor in this as well. There's little jokes like the Tachikomas, for example, in one of the raids. The Tachikomas are basically disabling cars, and the Tachikoma comes to an alley, and Bato is leaning on the car, and Togusa's sitting in the car at the wheel, and Bato looks at the Tachikoma, and the Tachikoma goes, "Should I disable this car as well?"
It's fun things like you say, the live action movie, it did miss quite a bit out. But the thing is, like, for normal audiences, I mean, when I went to see it, I think it was like a Wednesday morning, and there was like old people who saw it just because they've got one of them cards that get you into the cinema.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh, well, that was foreign, wasn't it? That was an actual quote from a Sunderland moviegoer. That was a bit foreign, wasn't it?
This is the thing, though. The English dub for Standalone Complex is, and you know me, I'm not really a fan of dubs, unless they're done extremely well. And the English dub for Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex, or Gitzak, and for Gitzak Second Giggity, the English dub for both series, because I have seen both already, in English and in Japanese, repeatedly. The English dub for both series is exceptional. And one of the reasons it is because at its heart, this is a science fiction film noir that's told as a TV series. That's basically what you have. Until we reach the singularity where man and machine combine, until we actually have active cyborgs roaming around like normal people, this will still be science fiction.
I don't know, Mark Zuckerberg looked...
yeah, but
and his congressional roasting he got.
Yeah, but
from old people trying to understand the internet.
Yeah, but that's the thing. That's not proof that he's a robot. Flip his head open and see if he's got a brain. That will then prove it once and for all. But until we actually have androids walking around like human beings, then this will still be sci-fi. It is a thriller. It is a film noir because it is. You can tell by the color palette they've chosen throughout this series. It is done in the style of a film noir. You can tell because of some of the camera angles, some of the shots that they've taken. The cinematography in this is really good.
Oh, yeah, the design of like the buildings and that, the background artwork is fantastic in all of Ghost in the Shell.
And the thing is, this is the Blu-ray version, and it's actually been upscaled for Blu-ray, which is great. Because I've seen the DVD version, and the DVD version on the fine details can be a little bit pixelated. But with the Blu-ray version, they've smoothed out a lot of the pixelation, and so you get a crisper, clearer image. You might not notice it at first, but when you compare it directly with the DVD version, which I did before talking about it today, you do actually see the difference. There is a difference in the sound quality as well on the Blu-ray version to the DVD version. Little differences like that. With the Blu-ray version as well, there are all sorts of lovely extras that you get. There are a whole heap of interviews with Kenji Kamiyama, who's the director, with Atsuko Tanaka, who plays Makoto in the Japanese dub. They're all Japanese interviews with Akio Otsuka, with Koichi Yamadera, who's basically playing Togusa, the only full human in the squad.
So that's one thing that they usually miss out, like the extras.
Yeah.
And like you say, I mean, how many discs was it that you got?
It's 8 discs because it's not just Standalone Complex. It is Standalone Complex and Second Gig all on one 8-disc collection, which is a brilliant, brilliant thing to do, put them all together. I really applaud putting them all together as one collection because you can basically, if you're in the mood for a Ghost in the Shell marathon, you've got it all there, right?
Yeah.
Doing the first 4 discs this week because I feel that the two series, yes, broadly and structurally, they might be similar to each other being part of the same series, part of the same franchise. But in terms of the story content, I feel that Second Gig needs its own coverage because it is a very different animal to Standalone Complex. And one of the reasons for that is, in terms of the complex story in Standalone Complex, The Laughing Man is a different type of story to what happens in Second Gig. And you know what I'm talking about there.
Yeah.
In Second Gig, the stakes are a lot higher. It's not all about politics and things like that. But that is one of the beauties of this series right now. I have always said one of the things about this about Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex is that it is intricate in terms of its world building. You have the military, the police, the politicians, you have the civilians, you have the private citizens, the businessmen, everything like that, and they're all intermixed in this, what can at times be almost like a Greek tragedy or a Shakespearean play.
And it is, the political side of it, it's at times it's like a proper chess game.
Yeah, and this is the thing, it's very inventive, it's very unique the way that it combines the standalone and complex stories, and it's got a lot more focus on the political machinations, the schemes, the plots, the plans, that sort of thing. It's got a lot more focus on those and the build-up than it does on just going out all guns blazing, and I think that's also one of the reasons why some people didn't like Standalone Complex. They'd watched Ghost in the Shell, they saw the magnificent ending to the movie, and then they went, oh, right, Standalone Complex, more of the same. Yay, all guns blazing. No.
No. You got in there with the wrong mindset.
Why am I watching something about political corruption?
Because that's what makes the plot good. It's all fine and well having all the action and,
Tucky, I left the door open for you to make a magnificent joke.
I'm not making any magnificent... I'm terrible at jokes.
Let's see, the joke you could have said was, well, stop watching the news and start watching anime.
Oh, dear. I'm not going to tell favour with that. The news is important. Do you not see the election news? Apparently, the party that lost seats won the election. But that's that. I'm not going to get political.
Hasn't that happened like 3 times in a row now?
Yeah, somehow. And they say it's not a corrupt country. Well, that's another matter for another day.
Yeah, we're not going to get involved in politics. Anyway, Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex, if you're a fan of Ghost in the Shell, if you're a fan of science fiction, if you're a fan of cyberpunk or anything like that, you owe it to yourself to watch this series because it is that good. It does stand up to scrutiny. Even now, the series came out originally, what year was it, 2002?
Yeah.
So it's 16 years old, Standalone Complex.
It's old enough to buy a lottery ticket.
Yeah, it's old enough to buy a lottery ticket. It's really held up well. The themes in it, still, a lot of them still hold true today. In fact, probably more true today than when it first aired, especially stuff dealing with The Laughing Man.
Oh, yeah.
Second Gig, like I said, going to cover that next week. But you'll understand why when I talk about it, you'll understand why I treat it as a completely different beast. Full credit to Production IG. They've done a magnificent job on this. Full credit to Masamune Nishiro for actually creating this world in the first place. Big, big, big credit goes to Kenji Kamiyama. He's done an amazing job. Yoko Kanno with the music. The late, wonderful Origa for that magnificent theme tune.
Honorable mentions as well for the script writers who managed to get a dub that passes your high standards.
Yep. See, this is the thing. when you have dub standards that are like mine, then whoever worked on the dialogue for the English dub, you really deserve a pat on your back. And if you were here, I'd be slapping you on the back and buying you drinks because you've done a magnificent job. The actors as well have done an amazing job, especially the English actors. The Japanese voice actors kind of expect, but the English voice actors have done a magnificent job as well. And seriously, for the live-action movie, for the role of Makoto Kusanagi, Mimi Woods, Mary Elizabeth McGlynn, Scarlett Johansson should have been their understudy for this role because they nailed it in the TV series.
Deservedly so as well. And it's one of the things where it's became Ghost in the Shell, the whole shebang of Ghost in the Shell, all franchise, became such an iconic thing. It's one of those must-watch animes. If you are getting into anime, it's a must-watch thing. Not so much with the live-action movie, but it was that important that a live-action movie was considered to be a good step forward.
Yeah.
And that's usually a good thing. And, I mean, we're seeing a few more live-action adaptations. Have you seen the new Bleach trailer?
Yeah. But I do have to ask, will what you're covering ever get a live-action?
Oh, God, I hope not. That's for the furry connotations.
Yes.
Oh, all of the furry connotations.
Oh, suit as, you, sir. Suit
as,
you.
That's what I've been watching. I've been on Netflix again. Also, mentioned before getting to this, Netflix have released the Castlevania Season 2 trailer.
Yeah.
Interesting use, because they actually used the original NES and the Castlevania cartridge in the advertisement, which was a nice touch. But Castlevania, if you don't know about Castlevania, I suggest watching it. It was only like 4 episodes long.
Yeah.
And it's something to look forward to. And this is a thing Netflix have been doing, some amazing anime side things. It's not just like things like a marathon and Netflix and chill or whatever the meme says. It's became a serious player in the whole anime industry. And the thing is, they've been pulling out some really good stuff, some really enough stuff as well. See, let's not forget, what was that one with Jaden Smith in?
Oh, don't talk to me about that. I forgot the name of it. You
Toblerone or Neo Toblerone or something like that.
Supernatural Toblerones in a sci-fi setting with the world and loads of rich people. Because the world looks like that.
Also, sticking with the Toblerone, the new Adam Sandler movie, Weekend Of, has Steve Buscemi, is that how you pronounce his name?
Steve Buscemi, yeah.
Yeah, they've got him holding a giant Toblerone in the advert. Now, I'm not saying Netflix is run by Toblerone, but there's a strong indication that Toblerone have some Toblerone in the pie, so to speak.
Now, I just want to go back to you commenting about Netflix being a player, because that then conjured up a weird image in my head of Netflix with, like, a hat with a feather on it and platform shoes and, feather boa.
Yeah, Netflix is the ultimate anime pimp.
Yes. No, the ultimate anime Mac Daddy.
Yeah, Mr. Long Leg Mac Daddy. But it's definitely, the thing is, it's caught my attention because I pay for Funimation, I pay for Crunchyroll, even though Crunchyroll said they'd give us it for free because I run an event. But I pay for them anyway. And usually I'd stick to Crunchyroll because Funimation, for me, doesn't do it. But then out of nowhere comes Netflix.
Well, not really out of nowhere. I mean, they have history with anime before. It's just, anime was like their abusive boyfriend. Until they actually got therapy and now they're happily living together. They've got a cat and a dog and...
Yeah, they worked it out. They passed the Jeremy Kyle lie detector test. So it's a weird thing to think of Netflix as that kind of entity for anime. But considering people usually go on, I've heard like Stranger Things is a good series to marathon. And all the other like little series that they had. I can't even remember why I started like getting Netflix. Because I know sites that kind of do the Netflix shows, but I don't have to pay for it. But I moved on to Netflix. And the thing is, the anime that's been coming out, I mean, we've done Godzilla, we've done Castlevania. They've got other different ones. They've had Bloodlad on, they've had Samurai Flamenco. I'm not going through the best ones by any means. But anime is there, and it's there in a mainstream format. Because practically everybody has Netflix. I think they did High School DxD. for some reason rated it at 15, but they got away with rating it at 15.
Well, there's not for some reason. It was rated at 15 in the UK by the BBFC.
Yeah, for some reason. You know, but that's that. And this is one I've waffled on too much at the moment.
Yeah.
But I've got into this one, and it's Agaretsuko, or Aggressive Retsuko. And
see, when you said it the first time to me, I was like, what? Is that what you say when you're having a tricky poo?
I'm going for an Agaretsuko.
No, it'd be like you're just there on the toilet going, Agaretsuko!
Sounds like a tricky sex act as well, but that's another thing. It's one of these ones that I initially saw the trailer and I saw everybody on my timeline commenting on it. And one thing I hate is when fans go daft over something. I don't know why. I don't know if I'm one of them people that likes just to be on the outside of things, or I like it to be like a niche or something hidden and that. But mainstream stuff, that's what puts off Breaking Bad when I started it, the fan reaction. And the fan reaction to this was like, oh, it's amazing. Yes. And the basis behind this is you have Retsuko, who is an anthropomorphized red panda who works in an accountancy department for a firm in Tokyo, I believe.
Yeah.
And her gimmick, shall we say, is she sings death metal.
So how is this different from Detroit Metal City?
Oh, it's definitely different. Because they use, like, we've touched on it, it's a Sanrio kind of like Hello Kitty. Like, I mean, you said it was Happy Tree Friends kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's along them lines, like cute creatures doing things that seem satanic at times.
So is it like the animal soldiers from Astro Fighter Sunred, where they're cute and fluffy? Like Usakots is a robot cyborg bunny, but he's absolutely evil, but he can't go out in public because all the women find him so deliciously cute that they attack him.
Kind of. Only we've toned down the violence a bit and you've practically got it.
It's
a weird thing because this appeals to furry fandom. It appeals to like the cutesy kawaii kind of, you know, that kind of section of the world. And obviously death metal fans, because, you know, death metal. And then you've got the casual viewer. And this is the thing. I went into this watching it thinking, I'm probably not going to like this because it's going to be a gimmick. It's going to be a cash-in. Like things like that we've seen from Japan, like Lady Beard or Deadlift Lolita or whatever he's called now, where it's like cute girl, guy in a maid's dress with a beard with pigtails, or baby metal. You know, a much more popular one, like cute girls singing heavy metal or death metal songs. And it works. It sells.
Yeah.
And I think like the creators have looked at that and went, well, you know what we want? We want a cute little panda who sings death metal.
This is why we're talking about Trash Panda Death Metal.
Trash Panda, is that going to be the title of the show?
No.
Oh, terrible.
There are other contenders, like Big Red Codpiece.
Nicolas Cage's Sunday Carvery in a Hammock.
Nicolas Cage's Sunday Carvery. Let's just leave it at that.
But moving back to Agaretsuko, I saw this, I thought, like, you know, it's going to be a gimmick. The episodes are pretty short. I think they're about 15 minutes. And, like I say, it's on Netflix, so you can marathon it all. And initially, it's like, well, she sings death metal to get through her life. And after about three episodes, I started finding myself interested in the plot. Okay. And then all of a sudden, it's like one of the things, like, you got us, you bastards, didn't you?
That's a very usual hook.
Well, no, this is the thing. It's because she starts off in her life. She's left college or university or whatever. She thinks she's going to be set for life. It's got a happy day. Out she goes, you know, and then she snaps her ankle and screams in like a proper death metal way. And then it's like, ah, so that's it. And then roll titles and then move forward. And then there's this whole workplace environment. There's a whole plot. Like she's got this one friend who she's kind of addicted to social media. And she hates everybody on social media, but she's one of those people anyway. She's in a social media attention hog, but she's also got a really like terrible laugh. Like whoever dubbed her, because the laugh's like, ha ha ha. And
see, you say that's a terrible laugh, but I've heard that ominous laughter before.
Yeah, well, that's her laugh. It's like, oh, you shouldn't have done that to me.
I think it's done intentionally. No, I just want to ask, the person who does this laugh, is it female?
Yes.
Is she short? It's not,
yeah, she's short, but does it's not like that. Pink,
No. Does she have pink hair?
No, she doesn't.
Does she swallow things at random, like people, houses, trees, lakes?
No comments on the swallowing thing.
Okay. The reason I'm asking is because the only other character I know who has that laugh is Goo. And Goo is terrifying. Hilarious, but terrifying. And also, Goo has the same habit. Her biggest pastime is making the main character's life a living hell and stressing them out.
Well, she doesn't. She's like a friend of the main character. This is a thing.
Oh, no, Goo's a friend to the main character. Don't get me wrong. If the main character's in danger, she'll help.
She doesn't really go out of her way to... I mean, there's parts of it where she's kind of... I mean, like I say, it's an office setting, which is weird enough, like little animals in an office setting. The boss is a giant fat pig who's got this like really big kiss-ass assistant. Who,
again, you might want to spend more time around the stranger anime that I've seen, because I have seen the office animals in a few shows already.
Oh, no, but this is one of the things. I mean, it's supposed to be like a cutie like animals. I mean, one of the workmates is a hyena who fancies her but kind of doesn't come forward with these emotions. There's a really old turtle who has her do all of her work. And that thing's like, open this jar.
A hyena with emotional problems.
She puts her through the ringer for no reason, just to make her life a living hell. And the one way this little panda has to vent, this Retsuko has to vent, is to go in into a little karaoke bar, like a little karaoke booth, and just sing death metal. Like, kind of, it kind of like summarizes the episode. Her screaming death metal song summarizes like what's going on in her life.
So I've got to ask that. She's a red panda, not a raccoon, because you can't.
No, not a raccoon. No, this isn't. Right. I mean, Trash Panda. I've nicked that from. Guardians of the Galaxy, but it's not like that. She's a red panda. I mean, we all love red pandas. I think Anime Limited's mascot's a red panda, and it's like it's really cute and it's cuddly and it's one of those things.
Are you speaking for me when you say we all love red pandas?
Well, I'm not speaking for everybody. I'm just
general
consensus, because the comments from this are, oh, it's cute.
I'll have you know that red pandas and I, we are mortal enemies. Every red panda in existence is out to get me, and I can prove it.
I'm sure there's a fun story involving a zoo here.
No, there's no zoo. I just made all that up.
Oh, that's me figuring out. Well, I went to the zoo and I was traumatized. Most people are traumatized by the bigger beasts. No.
I could have gone with the red panda was so cute, it stole my girlfriend.
Awful.
After that, we've never seen eye to eye.
It's a weird show. That's your office environment, and there's all these characters around, and I found myself invested in the plot.
Yeah.
Because it's not just, I go to work, I get hard done by, I sing death metal about it. She develops these relationships, and there's this one where there's like two executives, I think one's assistant to the CEO, and the other one's just like one of the ones higher in the company. And she, as a part of the thing, because she's a 25-year-old panda who's single.
Okay.
And there's the whole stigma of, I work in an office, I'm 25, I'm single. You know, my time is running out kind of thing.
The clock is
and
ticking.
And she's like, well, I'll go and do yoga. And she goes to do yoga, and these two executives who are in the company, and she's always seen them as like these two, like, you see, one's a hippo, one's like an ostrich or a peacock or something. And like I say, it's like hot assistants. And when I say hot, I mean they try and portray that image rather than me actually finding a hippo and a peacock sexually attractive.
I like the way you're backtracking and kind of justifying what you're saying at exactly the same time.
I'm trying to make it out, because.
Step they're away trying, from trying the argument. Them,
like, you know, where you've got that like alpha bitch kind of thing, where it's like, yes, I am the woman, I am powerful, like a powerful female role model with an attractive body. I mean, I don't know what the how you rate an attractive peacock or hippo.
Well, you wouldn't call them.
But they've
alpha
got the walk.
Bitch.
They've got the walk. Down.
Yeah, you wouldn't call them alpha bitch. You'd say an alpha female.
No. Because it's that whole slang to. It's all slang to. I don't mean to be derogatory to females, and I apologize if I have offended anybody for doing so. But it's that kind of like the mentality. Like they are top dog. And that's their
basically,
kind of role in the company.
Basically, you're thinking the Ellen Ripley thing. This is my town. You got to get past me, female.
Yeah,
character.
But yeah. But they've got this side of them because, like I say, Retsuko takes up Yoga, and she finds that they just want to make friends with her because everybody sees them as these higher ups, and they're just like, oh, we're just normal people. We like to make friends, and the hippo. She's more. Like, in tune to that, she's like, Retsuko is like avoiding them because she doesn't feel like she's worthy enough to talk to them. And the hippo is like, oh, she didn't talk to us again. It's like, don't worry, we'll get her next time. they just want to be friends. And the special mention goes to the yoga tutor, who is a kangaroo who only sees protein. I don't know if he's like, he likes teenagers, like he's protein, or if it's like the fact that he's built like a brick shit house and he eats nothing but protein. But they try and make him out like this kangaroo is some sort of like next level human being who has like enlightenment, who can send thoughts throughout the cosmos to people. It's a weird angle to take for just like a yoga teacher who can only say one word, but it's funny.
Okay.
If you follow, you'd have to watch it to understand the thing. But anyway, so she makes her friends and they find out like she sings death metal. And the connection's made then. They're like, they are okay with her liking death metal. And she has this like little rage kanji appear on her forehead in a bright light whenever she's like venting off. And the thing is, the things that she experiences in the workplace are just like any other common person in a workplace. And that's what they nail on with this. Because she has to deal with sexism, with people who put all the workload onto her when they should be doing it themselves.
Yeah.
You know, like, they touch on really serious issues like workplace bullying and whatnot. And, like, there's a thing, like, the boss, like, say he's a giant pig and he's sexist and he's one of them ones that he's nitpicky, but he'll pick on you just because he can, kind of thing. And yeah. She confronts him. And there's a lot of drama around that. And it kind of grabs your attention and it drags you in further. And all of a sudden, it's not just a gimmick. It's not just a panda that sings death metal. She gets into a relationship and the relationship's kind of, it's slightly abusive, even though her partner, he's not really the proper abusive type. He just neglects her kind of thing. But she's got the rose tinted glasses and that, and it all comes to a head like neatly at the end. And it's quite a fun little ending. And I think it will get a season two, especially with what my friend circles say. And what I've seen of the reviews of it. And it's one of the ones that I definitely suggest that you go and watch, because if you look beyond the gimmick of like Death Metal Panda, you get an actual decent plot line and it's decently animated and the English dub casts, they do quite a good job of it.
Okay, excellent.
I know you haven't watched it yet, but I'm
going to give it a try. Because the thing is, Teen Titans Go, I don't like because I know exactly what it is. But Agretsuko, whatever it is, I've not seen that yet. I'm aware of what it is, I've just not watched it. And anything like that, I'm willing to at least give it a try. Don't get me wrong, I might not like it, but by the same token, I might absolutely adore it, because some of the shows that I like, do you remember Puka?
No.
Puka, Fuddy Love, the daughter of the noodle shop owner who's in love with the traveling ninja called Garu, and she's like ridiculously strong.
Aye.
Yeah.
I'd definitely suggest watching this because, like I said, it's Netflix. It's like that, short episodes. But
that's what I'm saying. I love Puka. I love that show. So there's every possibility that I'm going to like Agretsuko.
Just like I said, look beyond the gimmick and give it at least 3 episodes to get fully going.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like I said, I'm not going to go into this assuming it's a bad show. I didn't go into Teen Titans Go assuming it was bad. I actually watched it and found that it was bad. The movie might actually be better. It might be one of those shows where the movie weirdly is better than the TV series. And if that's the case, then obviously something's gone wrong somewhere.
We'll have to see how that goes, and I'm looking forward to Nicolas Cage's Meat Hammock. Nicolas Cage's Fun Fundoshi.
I'm not saying anything. I'll leave that for you to say. Anyway, we are at the end of the show, so we're going to leave you for this week. Hopefully, Mark and Andrew will be back next week. If you want to catch up with any of our shows, you can find them on our website or on Apple Podcasts or Audio Boom. If you are heading to our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, you'll find that we have a shop on there where you can buy some of our lovely wares. There are more designs coming in the future. We also have a Patreon, the link you'll find on there. If you want to show your support in a more direct way, you can contact us on Facebook or on our own Twitter, which is at Keyframe Podcast, if I remember rightly, since Mark
is here. Yes,
it is. Or you can email us direct, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. That's it from us for this week. We'll see you next time on Keyframe. Until then, I have been Rob.
And I've been Tucky.
And we will see you later.
Goodbye.